You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 65, Skeleton Soldiers on Fire. Today on the program, Brian Fuller leaves CBC's new Star Trek Discovery series to work on Neil Gaiman's American Gods full time. And we talk about the Gaming Awards coming up. We talked about Death Stranding, Hideo Kojima's new project, which looks amazing. And there's a new trailer out for that, so you should definitely watch that. And Mass Effect Andromeda, a long-awaited sequel to the series, debuted with a new trailer as well. And now the show. When everything is broken, and nothing's going right.
Star Trek Discovery. What a mess that's turned into. There was some good news earlier last week where they announced that Michelle Yeoh is actually going to play a captain on the show. Not the captain of the Discovery, but the captain of another ship. They also announced two other casting choices for other roles. They haven't announced the main character or any of those details yet. But then this week we learned that Brian Fuller is effectively no longer involved with the show, due to time commitments or whatever. He has elected to basically step down from day to day and not be involved in the production of the show, so that he can focus on American Gods. Obviously distressing news. It's certainly a shame that he's not going to be able to fulfill whatever vision he had for the show.
It doesn't mean that it's going to be bad, though.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be bad.
But I get the impression that maybe some people, when reading this news, think that maybe there was some kind of internal conflict. Maybe he wasn't agreeing with the direction of the show, but they... My interpretation that is not the case. They haven't given any indication that that is the issue. It's just a time constraint thing that he has this other project that he wants to work on, which is totally reasonable.
Yeah.
And it sounds like obviously he wants to come back. I mean, he did say, they have my number. If they want to call me back for season two and I'm available, I'll do it.
Mm.
So that means who is actually working on this show? Is there anyone that is working on that show now, be it writer, producer, director, that are avid Star Trek nerds? I haven't paid close attention to this.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't know anyone else attached to this other than Brian Fuller. I don't know who's in the writing team or anything like that. So it's hard to say if... the show will continue to maintain whatever quality level was initially set for it. Because I honestly don't know who's writing. I mean, Brian Fuller will undoubtedly have written the pilot episode, but... And maybe the season finale, I don't know. It depends how many scripts they got, too.
Mm-hmm.
But... yeah, I don't know what's going to happen there. And I don't know. It just feels like CBS isn't really trying hard enough with this show. They've delayed it a bunch of times, and there's been reports of it like being difficult to produce and issues with the budget, I think, was thrown around at some point. Plus, it's not even going to air on television. They're going straight to CBS All Access in the States and Netflix in the rest of the world. So, I mean, you can look at that one of two ways. Either A, they're not confident enough about the show to actually air it live on TV, Or B, they're hoping they can use the Star Trek brand to sort of jumpstart their own streaming original content and hope that they can get a bunch of subscriptions that way.
Right.
So, I mean, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to actually watch the first episode and see how it goes to know for sure which one of those two is true.
It really bothered me, and I don't know if it was last year or at the beginning of this year because everything's blurring for me, but do you remember that little teaser that they released, that really terrible CGI teaser of the new ship? It looked so bad. Like, why would you release that?
Yeah, like it looks worse than Voyager.
Honestly, it would have been better if they had not released anything. They should not have released anything. I think they did it. They felt maybe compelled because of the Star Trek anniversary that they needed something. But honestly,
they rushed it.
The logo and the sound would have been fine.
Yeah, like no part of that scene was good.
No.
At all. Like, it was rough. It was unfinished. And they even walked it back after, and they were like, well, that might not be what the final ship looks like. And it's like, okay, cool. So what was the point of showing us that when all it did was make us upset? And then you're like, well, none of it may even happen anyway, so don't worry about it.
Right. And, you know, it's just doing damage control because, I mean, we all know Star Trek fans are very vocal.
Oh, yes.
So it just didn't seem like a very good idea. I am going to keep an open mind. I'm not going to pass judgment, obviously, until it's out. And I just feel so desperate. I want it to be good because it's been, how long now since Enterprise? 10 years at least? I think it finished in 2003 or 2004.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a long, long time that Star Trek has been away from our TV sets, and this is an unusual thing. Paramount has always had a Star Trek show on TV. Well, at least, I mean, mind you, of course, there was a big gap between when the original series went off the air and they did the movies.
Yeah.
But from Next Generation on, it's just like, boom, one series finishes, another one starts. In fact, actually, Deep Space Nine started at the tail end of TNG.
Yeah, they overlapped.
So,
and Voyager started while DS9 was on.
Exactly. So to have a 10-year plus gap without Star Trek on TV, it sucks. Fans feel it. Fans really feel it. And perhaps the J.J. Abrams reboot movies have helped, or at least, you know, obviously the success of those movies, at least box office numbers, they've made a lot of money. Whether or not they sated Star Trek fans' appetites for seeing what they think Star Trek should be, that's up to debate, obviously. Yeah. I've had my own issues with those movies, but still haven't seen Beyond, by the way, which I hear is the best out of the trilogy.
Yeah, I would say so.
It's the most Trekkie from what I hear.
Yeah. Probably. I mean, it has renewed interest in the franchise. Some would argue it's the wrong kind of interest, solely because the movies aren't quite what Star Trek is supposed to be. But I would say that kind of creates a vacuum for a new Star Trek TV show that exemplifies what Star Trek is supposed to be. And, I mean, given recent events, we kind of need Star Trek in...
Are you saying that we need a hopeful, idealistic future?
Yeah, something like that.
A utopia where there's no poverty.
Or racism.
There's no racism. Right, yeah. But it's funny, though, because there is racism. There is a lot of racism in Star Trek.
Of course.
Between alien species.
You had the Roddenberry idealized thing, and then there was the far more interesting take in Deep Space Nine, and to a lesser degree, The Next Generation. I mean, The Next Generation still, in the first two seasons, had its hands tied behind its back because Roddenberry was still around preaching that vision of the future. And then they kind of were able to venture out a bit more, but it was Deep Space Nine that really painted the picture of, well, we'd all like to think the Federation is all perfect and everything, but really it's not that perfect, which is realistic. I mean,
right.
It would really, you'd really have to suspend disbelief to be like, yeah, it's totally possible that in the future people would end up completely getting rid of all their baser instincts and becoming this perfect unified society. And it's like, no, people are still going to be greedy. People are still going to be looking out for their own self-interest. That none of that's going to change.
And if anything, Deep Space Nine was such a great example of flawed individuals.
Yeah.
Which it still stands as my favorite Star Trek series. I think it's the deepest and richest storytelling, the most consistent, the most, it pulls on all your emotions, like just everything you feel. Yeah. You feel sorrow, you feel anger, you feel frustration. It just, no other Star Trek series has ever done that for me. TNG had its moments, but I really feel like DS9 took those few moments from TNG and really just hammered that home throughout the entire series.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I mean, especially with Sisko.
And yeah, like Sisko was really the linchpin of the whole series, thematically and narratively and so on. But what I particularly liked about it was, even with his flawed character, even with the mistakes he made, he still did his best to uphold the values of the Federation and fight for them. And it really showed like the true vision of Star Trek to me in those moments, where it was like, yeah, shit's fucked up. Yeah, we're not perfect, but we're damn well gonna try. And we're going to fight for these things that we have fought and died to protect and to uphold. It's like, it paints the Federation and Starfleet in the light of, they hope to be better than they are. And they hope to uphold ideas that are better than the sum of their parts. And then you look backwards at the future history of humanity, World War III and everything, meeting the Vulcans and looking back on all of that, and how humanity basically lifted themselves up out of that destruction and chaos, and realizing they weren't alone in the universe. And it was like, it was almost like this moment of higher consciousness when people finally realized, like, we're all in this together. We really have to like step it up. And I mean, Enterprise was a lot of things, but I think one of the really good things it showed was how humanity interacted with the Vulcans and the rest of the galaxy when they were starting out, and just kind of struggling to develop that innate set of core values that turned into the Federation. Like, that thread, I thought, was probably the strongest thing in Enterprise. And it's a shame that they didn't follow through on it more. They just kind of had throwaway episodes, like one where they deliberately interfered in a civilization and the captain said this, like, stupid in-joke thing about, maybe someday we'll have some sort of prime directive about not doing this, but
yeah, that
we
was,
don't have such that, a thing
that
so,
was just terrible.
Yeah, like they could have done a far better job, but I think that narrative thread was the strongest thing in that series, and it just ties all the way from that beginning through to DS9 and beyond. And I'd like to think that that's what Discovery is going to be about.
I hope so. I mean, if there's anyone working on it that has any sense, they'll look at something like DS9 and try to, I mean, not duplicate it, but learn from the lessons.
I think it's not going to duplicate it. I mean, the unique thing about DS9 was they were all on this station in this one place, and that allowed the story to kind of revolve around people coming in and out of the station and things happening on Bajor and stuff coming out of the wormhole and so on.
The station literally revolving.
Yeah.
In space.
Exactly. So that kind of allowed a sort of narrative stability to the series. Whereas with Discovery, it's supposedly literally going to be about Discovery, about this ship going through space and exploring. Hopefully in a way that hasn't been tackled by Star Trek before. I mean, the Next Generation, the Enterprise did explore somewhat, but it was never with that sense of true, like, mystifying wonder. Like, they were just like, oh, this particular star system is uncharted, let's take a look. Oh, it's all relatively boring. Oh, wait, what's that? And they had that breadth of knowledge to just be able to figure stuff out relatively quickly. Like, there was no real, like, mystery or sense of awe at what they were seeing. It was just like, oh, well, that's a whatever, insert technobabble here. This hopefully will bring a different flavor of they truly don't know where they're going or what they're looking at half the time, but they figure it out.
You know, a concern of mine, sort of tying this back to technology, this is supposed to be, for the first time, a Star Trek series that is only available on the CBS streaming app.
Yeah.
Right? So we know that much, which to me, I think that's great. I think it's a great move and an acknowledgement of the changing landscape of how people consume media.
If that's why they did it.
If that's why they did it. But the other thing that worries me is that it limits the amount of people that can watch it if it's only available in the U.S. Hmm. We don't have that here.
Well, right, but they've actually secured rights with Netflix for the rest of the world. So you get it on CBS All Access in the States, but then everywhere else it's actually going to be available on Netflix from day one. I'm not sure what their release schedule looks like. It could be all at once, or it could be a new episode every week. I know at least a handful of Netflix shows have done that, where they started the season and it was literally a new episode would be available every week. Just like traditional television. So, I mean, that capability definitely exists within the Netflix platform. So if CBS wanted to do it that way, they could. So yeah, I don't know which they'll go for. I would think they're going to have a new episode every week and not do the all at once binge watching, because I don't know.
They want to continue what, just for tradition to build that suspense. Oh, I got to wait till next week to find out what happens.
I think so.
But like, that's over. Don't you think that's over with? I mean, those days are gone.
I think it is, but I think they want to maintain Star Trek as a sort of spectacle, perhaps. Like, I mean, I don't personally agree with it. I think releasing all of them at once is probably the best way to go, because it'll build that interest and get people talking way quicker. Instead of a conversation about, oh, what's going to happen next week? It'll be, oh my God, have you watched this entire series yet? Right. It's amazing. Like, it shifts the whole conversation. Like, the traditional broadcast pattern, you're always talking about waiting for the next episode. But if all of it's available, there will be people who quickly binge the entire thing, and then they talk to their friends, and they talk to their friends, and so on and so on and so on. And people start giving it a watch and going to the next episode and the next episode. Like it or not, that's where we are as a culture now. Mm-hmm. And to deny that is... You're basically like... It's kind of a shitty thing about society right now where it's like... You almost want to say our attention spans are so short that you have to have it bingeable. Otherwise, it's like the next week, nobody will even remember. But we do still have shows that air every week. Westworld.
That's right.
Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, like all of those shows.
Well, there are other shows that I don't remember if it's a Netflix original, but the new Dusk Till Dawn TV series that's on Netflix always has a new episode, one episode every week.
Yeah, that was the one.
And is that a Netflix series? I can't remember if it is.
Yeah, it is.
So Netflix isn't really strict with the way the format works.
No.
For some shows, they release them all at once, and I'm not really sure what the reason is for that. Why do it for one show and not for another show?
It could be a choice on the part of the makers of the show.
That's very true. They might give some freedom to them to decide, well, how often do you want to release these? I'd argue, though, I know people prefer having all the episodes released at once. I'd argue that to me is the future, and I think that they should embrace that for the main reason that when you have one long continuous story arc, which supposedly this new series is, you need to really pay attention and you need to remember what is going on in the overall story. My worry is that if they do one episode a week and some people may forget what's going on because they're so busy with their lives.
I think that doesn't really hold water, though, because, again, we have shows like The Walking Dead and Westworld that are on every week.
Yeah.
And people remember those just fine. Game of Thrones.
But what about if they were...
Like, I think you can have it both ways. Mm-hmm. I think because it's digital, you can basically choose whatever broadcast pattern you want at this point. Like, you can have one every week. You can have all of them at once. You can say, okay, here's a block of three episodes that are sort of connected. You can have those now, and then the next three will be available in a week or whatever. Like, you're not bound by, oh, here are all of these slots in this weekly schedule. That doesn't exist anymore. So it's like, well, you can publish these episodes whenever you want, however you want. So, I mean, maybe it's the time to experiment with different patterns, come up with different ways of airing shows.
That's true. I just feel personally, you know, it's my own opinion, that when you release all the episodes at once for a season, you get through them all, you may want to watch them again. And it's great to be able to just see one complete story over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So that's my preference.
Yeah,
but
I mean, there's something to be said for that. But also, then it's over. Like, that's the thing. Once you've watched it, you've watched it. And you can watch it again, sure. But it's never the same as that initial experience of going through the story. So, I mean, maybe there's something to be said for dragging it out a bit longer and kind of rate limiting it. I mean, there's a reason that shows were aired once a week. I mean, news programs and variety shows, those are usually daily during the week, traditionally. This would actually be an interesting question. I don't actually know the answer to this, like how the idea of airing an episode of a serialized show once a week came about. Like, how was that decision initially arrived at? And I think the answer to that probably gives us a lot of information about the current state of things now.
And we don't know the... It'd be nice to have access to the data. I'm sure they have the metrics. They can maybe do some math and figure out what maybe one works better than the other. I don't know.
Well, if anyone has that data, Netflix does. I mean, they have shows that air once a week, and they have shows that are bingeable. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe it depends on the show. I think it could depend on a number of factors. I mean, House of Cards is like a novel, so that makes sense for it to be bingeable, because then the whole story is laid out in front of you and you can just read the whole thing, watch the whole thing at your leisure, because it's like a new book in a series. Because it's very, very tightly narrative driven. Like, there is a very clear arc throughout the entire series. The episodes are essentially chapters in a book. Not every show follows that format perfectly. I mean, some shows have filler episodes. Some shows don't have that tightly wound a narrative arc. And so you can be a bit freer with it. The Marvel shows obviously also have a fairly tightly wound narrative arc, so they can be released all at once, because the story follows through from the first episode to the last episode, and it's about the same thing. But From Dusk Till Dawn, I mean, I haven't seen the series, but I would assume it's about hunting vampires, and so that's a more episodic thing where you have a monster of the week or something.
This series actually is not like that, actually.
Oh, it isn't?
It's one big long story arc.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, they actually completely... they have, I think his name's Robert Rodriguez from the original movie on it.
Yeah.
Who's an integral part, but they veer a lot from the movie. They changed quite a lot of things, but it's actually, okay. In my opinion, it's actually superior to the movie in every way. Yeah. They created this new world and these new characters, and it's fascinating. And it's just every episode is like, what is happening? What's going to happen in the next one? It's all connected.
Okay.
And they're doing one new episode per week. But again, like you were saying, I mean, maybe this is, they allow creative freedom. Maybe the director, maybe that's what Rodriguez wants.
Would you say that show's more serialized? Like, maybe at the end of every episode, you're not sure what's going to happen. Like, every episode sort of ends on a cliffhanger, kind of.
It does. Yeah.
Okay.
You're always waiting. I don't know what's going to happen.
And I mean, that works for both formats, really.
It does. Like, so that's the thing. We don't know.
If it's bingeable, it makes you keep watching. If it's once a week, it makes you anticipate the next episode.
Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe it just comes down to preference.
Yeah.
People just, the market is saying, we prefer if all episodes are released at once.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I mean, maybe all this is in our heads. Maybe it doesn't matter.
It could
matter.
Be. It could be.
Like, I mean, either way.
We grew up waiting for new episode of a TV show every week, so
we're used to it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that doesn't mean it shouldn't change, but at the same time, it's like, maybe they're both equally valid. Maybe one isn't better than the other. Maybe it's just down to creative opinion on it. Like, if I'm the creator of the show, how do I want to release the show to people? And it's up to them to make that decision, and ultimately it has no impact one way or the other.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, when is this new Star Trek series coming out? Did they say what month?
I think it's supposed to be like March or April.
Okay, so it's not too long of a wait until we see what they've got.
It was supposed to be anyways, but they apparently haven't started filming yet. So,
well, that's not good. They should have started now.
They don't even have a cast.
They need a backlog of episodes to build up here.
Well, I mean...
Wait, they haven't cast all the major characters?
Well, they've only announced Michelle Yeoh and two other people.
Well, they've only announced. That doesn't mean that they haven't hired anyone yet.
True.
They're probably keeping it really secret. Sounds like it.
Probably. I mean, it's hard to know. I would guess that the writing team has probably finished all the scripts for season one. Probably. Like, if it's an arc, then they know the story they want to tell, and they're able to split it up into however many episodes they have.
Yeah.
So that part at least is probably done. And then they could have people working on all the effect shots, like the ship in space and the ship doing this and so on. So that's probably all being worked on. So they can kind of front load all of that stuff.
I still wish they used models, though, for that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, CG's really good now, but then it's
It can be, but it can also go horribly wrong if it's not done well.
Because it's a show, I don't know what their budget for effect shots is. If it's not high, then the ships are probably going to look terrible. It depends how much money they're putting into this. But, I mean, given the fact that they've hired Michelle Yeoh as, like, not even the main character, that suggests a somewhat large budget. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen.
We'll see what happens. We've spent enough time on this. Why don't we move on to the next item on the agenda?
Right. So there was the Game Awards yesterday evening.
The Game Awards. One and only.
Yes. Started out as the Spike Video Game Awards, for those who remember those. And it's been turned into essentially the Oscars of video games. Every year, developers have world premiere trailers or footage or gameplay demos. This year was no exception. We had a new trailer for The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, as well as an extended gameplay demo. We got 3 minutes of gameplay for Mass Effect Andromeda. We got a new trailer for Hideo Kojima's new game, Death Stranding, where it was revealed that Mads Mikkelsen will be playing a role in the game.
Why does he look like the guy, his character from Doctor Strange, though?
My only answer is Kojima saw Doctor Strange and worked that into the trailer for some reason. I don't know. I mean, Mads Mikkelsen sort of has a thing with eyes. I don't know if you've noticed. Like, Doctor Strange, the weird eyes.
I've noticed.
Nothing in Hannibal, but then Casino Royale, he had an eye that bled. In this one movie,
I still don't understand why that happened.
He had an eye missing. Like, I don't know. There's something about him. He picks roles where weird shit happens to his eyes. There's actually an article on Polygon or The Verge that's like an open letter to Mads Mikkelsen about, dude, why do you do this with eyes? What's going on? Mm-hmm.
Well, the game looks interesting. Before we started the podcast, you had played me the new trailer, which was more of a full trailer as opposed to just the strange teaser.
Yes.
I mean, not that the full trailer isn't strange, but I still have no idea what the hell is going
on in
this game.
I don't think anyone knows what the hell is going on, as is customary for initial Hideo Kojima game trailers.
It's a good thing, though. I think that is a good thing because, honestly, I'm kind of tired of movie trailers and games giving away so much before it's actually come out, where there are no surprises. I like that he's making you sit there and think, what is going on? Who are these people? What is happening?
And the cool thing is, the initial trailers never actually reveal what the game is or what it's about. A lot of the time, he inserts red herrings into these trailers that aren't actually going to be part of the final game. So you really are kept guessing as to what the actual game is going to be.
Maybe this is really Metal Gear Solid 6.
Yeah, it isn't, because Konami has the rights to Metal Gear Solid.
The lolly lule lo.
Yeah, no. It's new. He can't do another Metal Gear Solid game.
I know.
They're doing that stupid zombie survival.
You know, I never finished Phantom Pain. I should probably try and do that sometime.
Well, I mean, they didn't even finish Phantom Pain. Oh!
There were aspects, I don't want to get into a whole
insert
diatribe of that.
Insert missing chapter here.
there are many aspects of that game that I liked. I mean, obviously I haven't finished it, but there were some aspects I felt like, this is just a lot of this stuff was repetitive, I felt. And why am I going here to save this prisoner again, find this paper? Like,
It
just didn't quite grab me like the rest of the games in the series.
Well, it's because he got really ambitious with it, but also at the same time Konami was breathing down his neck, and then they finally just kind of shut it off and packaged up what was done, and that was that. And then they put him in a white room for 6 months until his contract expired.
And he went insane.
And now we have Mads Mikkelsen covered in black tentacles and ooze is everywhere. And there's a baby for some reason. And Guillermo del Toro is wearing a suit. And
do his eyes bleed?
I don't know. Maybe. And then there's tanks and skeleton soldiers and fire and I don't know.
As an unrelated tangent here, did they ever explain why Le Chiffre in Casino Royale's eye, like why his eyes bled?
He had...
Is that a weird medical condition he had or something?
He claimed he had some sort of medical condition, yeah. Like he started bleeding from the eye at that poker game and he was like, crazing of the membrane or something.
Never forget he was the first Bond villain to scratch his balls.
Yep. And then he was unceremoniously shot in the head by Mr. White.
So what else is going on at the Game Awards? Anything else that, is that you only care about Kojima? Is that it?
Oh no.
Nothing else of interest.
I mean, that was the largest announcement.
Of course that's going to be the biggest announcement.
The Mass Effect Andromeda footage looked really good.
I've never actually played a Mass Effect game.
Oh, you absolutely should. Just don't play the ending of the
third one. I should probably play the first one. I'm sure it's probably like $5 on PlayStation Store by now.
Oh yeah, probably.
I mean, it is pretty old. I don't know if they, did they ever remaster those games for the PS4? They upscale the graphics?
They did do a trilogy bundle. I don't know what platforms it's on. It might be 360 PS3. Don't quote me on that, though.
I won't.
I'm not sure.
I would never quote you when you sound so unsure of yourself.
Yeah, I don't know. It might
That's
be.
Okay.
You can check. But yeah, they did do a trilogy re-release where I think they remastered some of it. Not all of it. Like the third one, I think they pretty much kept as is. The first and second one, they cleaned up a bit. Yeah, like it's a really great story until they drop the ball at the very end of the third one. But that aside, it's an incredible world. Incredible characters, incredible alien races, the whole nine yards. And this new one basically departs all of that story completely. And it's like humanity and the other races of the Milky Way sent these colony ships out to the Andromeda galaxy. Everyone's in stasis and then they all arrive and you're a human on the human colony ship. Every race sent their own ship. At the head of every ship is a pathfinder whose job is to find a world to colonize. And you play that character, and it's your job to basically find a new home for humanity. At least the humanity that's on the ship.
Oh, yeah, that's easy to do.
And the whole game takes place like 3,000 years after the original because of the transit time between galaxies.
But you really know your game history here.
Actually, no, it's not 3,000. How long was it? 600 years.
Yeah. No, nobody cares.
Yeah. Well, basically they're...
Well, maybe some fervent fans.
They're leaving the story of the original trilogy completely behind.
Okay.
Like, all of those people are
dead. It's kind of like a Battlestar Galactica thing where they're, like, searching for a new home.
I guess, kind of. And then there's, like, this... They've revealed one alien race that's an antagonist. They have kind of organic armor and they look kind of bug-like. It's not clear exactly what the story is going to be about. The gameplay trailer did show, however, that some planets have already been settled. So I'm wondering perhaps if some ships showed up before the ship that the main character's on, something like that. I mean, as is customary in Mass Effect, I'm sure something went horribly wrong with the human ship and it's like... Oh, we arrived 50 years too late. Oh, God, what's going on? Nobody knows. Something. I don't know. There's always something like that that happens.
Yeah.
So maybe they arrive and it's like, oh, everyone else is already here and they've got colony planets and blah. Something like that, maybe. Yeah, so that looks pretty good. It's running on an upgraded version of the Dragon Age Inquisition engine. It looks fabulous. They've got an upgraded...
Well, I hope they made some tweaks, because I bought Dragon Age. I really thought it was unimpressive looking.
Really?
I didn't think, like, especially, like, the, if you look at the characters and their hair... The hair just barely... Everyone was complaining about the hair. The hair never moved.
It looks like they've improved on that.
Oh, good.
In this iteration of the engine. But, yeah, I don't know. It looks good. But I wouldn't say it was the standout. I mean, Death Stranding was the standout. But second place easily was Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, which incidentally won Most Anticipated Game, which was a fan vote award. So people actually voted for that category. And it beat Red Dead Redemption 2.
Another good one. That's like a cowboy game or something, right?
Oh, yeah. Only the most anticipated sequel of all time. And yet Zelda still beat it.
This is terrible. I don't even know why I talk about video games. I'm so out of touch now. I haven't been playing very many.
Yeah, like Red Dead Redemption was Rockstar.
Yeah.
So, just amazing open world game.
You know what I like doing? I like replaying the games I've already played. I just replay my old games over and over and over again. Like I replayed The Last of Us, replayed, what did I replay lately? Oh, I'm going through, Wolfenstein, The New Order again, which is a great game.
Yep.
I don't know. Maybe it's just out of familiarity. I had such great experience with those. You know, actually, you know what I really want to play again is they've remastered Arkham Asylum and Arkham City for the PS4. I'm very interested. I saw this. They actually did a video side-by-side comparisons, and I was really impressed with what they did with the textures, how much more detail there is in the textures, draw distance and stuff like that. So I will have to pick those up, because I should have actually done it on the flash sale, because the bundle,
yeah,
they're doing
did
a bundle,
have a pretty good sale
and it
there.
Was a really good price for the two.
Yeah. Yeah. Red Dead Redemption was probably one of the best games in a while. I mean, it had the pedigree of Grand Theft Auto in that it was an awesome open world game and everything. But at the same time, it also had an incredibly impressive story that really won people over. Great soundtrack as well, really compelling characters. Like, it was just so lovingly crafted, and people have been wanting a sequel to that game for years now. And all it took was Rockstar to tweet an image that was just red, just a square of red, and everyone lost their shit. And then they posted more stuff, like the more backgrounds,
and then they're saying people that did Grand Theft Auto.
Yes. So this new game is running on the Grand Theft Auto 5 engine, though it looks to be upgraded from that. Just stunning visuals.
Still haven't played the latest Grand Theft Auto, but I mean, everything that I saw, everything that I read about the game engine seemed incredibly impressive. Just the breadth and scope of it all.
Oh yeah. So to have a Wild West game in that engine is going to be pretty impressive. But obviously everyone's hoping that they maintain that high watermark for the story.
Absolutely.
I mean, Grand Theft Auto kind of has fun with itself. It's irreverent. It does kind of questionable things. But Red Dead Redemption told a really realistic, grounded story in that setting and that time, and told it with... fully realized characters. Like, this was a really good story. And so everyone, including me, is really hoping that the sequel maintains that, and that it's not just running around and hog tying cows and throwing people onto train tracks and twirling a mustache.
Well, I think people expect more than that. People accept substance today. I think the demands from consumers just keep getting greater and greater, because technology allows the storytellers to just just tell better stories, more realistic stories with greater depth. And when you don't deliver on all of those fronts, yeah, people get pretty disappointed. People want cinematic, you know, experiences. They want depth to their games on many levels.
Well, some people do. I mean, something mindless is always fun once in a while, but yeah, I think gaming has definitely evolved as an art form, and we are seeing more and more serious ventures into the medium, for sure.
Anything else?
Well, looping back to Zelda, I mean, just showing off more of the world, more details, more hints at what the story might be.
And this is happening at the event? This is not just a Sony event, right? Game Awards, of course, they cover everything.
Yeah, no, the Game Awards covers everything.
I've never actually watched it, I don't think.
Yeah, it's this year was actually particularly notable because they streamed the whole thing live in 4K.
Oh, that's right. No, you're right. I did watch a little bit of it. It was quite a big event.
Oh, yeah. They had Run the Jewels performing live. They had...
Didn't they have competitions too, like game competitions with people?
No, they did have an esports award though, so maybe that's what you saw.
There was, I saw people playing, what was that really popular game that came out for the Wii U this
Splatoon?
Year?
It
was Splatoon. I saw people competing on a live streaming event. What was that? That was earlier at the beginning of the year. I'm pretty sure it was that event, maybe it was a different one.
No, the Game Awards is only like, right now, one night only.
Oh, okay. Well, there was an event this year where people were competing and it was live.
A number of esports tournaments have started streaming their stuff live. I don't know.
I don't remember now. I'd have to look it up. It wasn't just a competition. It was like people were demoing games and then they would switch back to people playing Splatoon. I don't remember what the hell that was though.
E3?
It could have been E3. I mean, when was E3?
June.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's the big one, but the Game Awards has definitely become more of a big event in its own right. Like, E3 does get game reveals, but the Game Awards also gets some pretty big reveals as well, at least in the past few years.
You've been listening to The Impromptu on Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. To show your support for this podcast and what we do, please become a monthly sustaining donator. It is the single best way to show your support. And you can do that today by going to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate $1. It really does make a difference. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or wherever you can find podcasts. We're available streaming on Google Play Music and Stitcher, as well as TuneIn. If you're using iTunes, we would sincerely appreciate you leaving a review for us. It makes us feel good, but it also helps other people find the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. And I'm Alex Knight at Zero Distraction. We're on Instagram at Hologram Radio Shows. And if you'd like to send feedback to the two of us, you can do that now by sending an email to theimpromptu@hologramradio.org.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.